Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
Comment ma fille et moi pouvons-nous définir qui peut lui envoyer des messages? Comment parler avec mon fils des bons comportements à adopter en ligne? Si vous avez des questions sur la sécurité de vos ados en ligne, vous trouverez des ressources utiles dans le Centre Familial Instagram. Le Centre Familial vous permet de paramétrer la supervision parentale avec votre ado. Et dans l'espace éducation, vous trouverez des conseils d'experts pour discuter de sécurité. Découvrez nos outils pour la famille sur instagram.com/outils-pour-la-famille.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Robin Brandt, and at 13 hours GMT on Wednesday the 15th of November, these are our main stories. Israeli forces have been going from room to room interrogating people in a raid on Gaza's main hospital, which Hamas denies using as a command centre. Britain's Supreme Court has ruled that the government's flagship policy of sending asylum seekers to Rwanda is unlawful. Also in this podcast, a major study has found that global warming is already causing severe damage to humans' health. And it eats its own feathers and then it vomits. The New Zealand bird and the talk show host who loves it.
I don't just want the Blue Tacky Tacky to win. I want it to win in the biggest landslide in the history of this magnificent competition.
We begin in the Gaza Strip, where more than 100 Israeli soldiers have stormed the largest hospital supported by tanks in its grounds. The army says five Hamas gunmen were killed in a firefight outside the Al-Shifa hospital, and soldiers fought off what it called terrorist squads on entering the complex. Israeli forces are said to be searching the hospital and interrogating patients, staff, and some of those seeking shelter inside. Israel says Hamas has military centres underneath the compound. Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari is a spokesman for the Israel Defence Force.
Based on intelligence information and an operational necessity, IDF forces are carrying out a precise and targeted operation against Hamas in a specified area in the Shifa Hospital. Israel is at war with Hamas, not with the civilians in Gaza. The IDF forces include medical teams and Arabic speakers who have undergone specified training to prepare for this complex and sensitive environment with the intent that no harm is caused to the civilians being used by Hamas as human shields.
Well, men aged between 60 and 40, excluding medical staff, have been told to leave the building. There are thought to be thousands of people, medics, patients, babies and displaced civilians within the hospital complex. Martin Griffiths is the UN's Under-Secretary General for Humanitarian Affairs.
I understand their motive for seeking to get at Hamas wherever Hamas may be, but it doesn't do a thing to alter the very well-established protection that hospitals, schools and other such institutions have under international humanitarian law, not to be places of attack, but to be places of safety. And the Al-Shifa is no different from anywhere else in the world in that respect.
So that's the view of the UN and before that, Israel's government. Well, the BBC's Rushdi Abu Aluf is on the ground in Khan Yunis in the south of Gaza. He's spoken to a contact inside the Al-Shifa hospital.
Communication is very complicated in the area and very difficult to get any sort of information from inside. For the last 2 hours, I haven't heard anything from my source inside. But since the beginning of the operation, he has been sending SMS messages saying that at around 2:30 in the morning, six Israeli tanks and hundreds of Israeli commandos, he said, stormed the largest facility in Gaza, Shifa Hospital. He said then later on they were calling people by loudspeaker, people aged 16 to 40, only the men, to go out of the building except the emergency department and the surgical department, and to be gathered in the courtyard of the hospital. They bought a detector, like a scanning machine, and everybody has to go through the scanning machine before going into the space area. And he said soldiers were inside the hospital searching from room to room and interrogating the patient and the medical staff inside the hospital. He heard for about 10 minutes gunfire, and he believed it was like they were shooting on air just to force those remain inside to go out for interrogation. Tanks were surrounding the hospital from all around the area, and the whole facility is under Israeli control.
Do you know if people you've spoken to or the Israeli authorities are giving any more detail about specifically why Al-Shifa has been targeted and those claims that it is, in some sense, a cover for a Hamas base?
Yes, I think the Israelis were very clear from the beginning, saying that Hamas is using the Al-Shifa hospital as a command center for military purposes. Hamas, the militants group who also run the local authority here, including the health ministry, denied this, and they said, we are ready for any inspectors to come and inspect the hospital. International inquiry, they deny any military involvement inside the hospital. And they issued just a statement about an hour ago saying that definitely nobody was shooting or using any of the hospital properties for any military purposes. So now the whole hospital is in control of the Israelis, and they are inside searching and investigating. And we are waiting to hear more from the Israelis about this operation.
Rushdi Abu Alouf, who continues to report for us from the south of Gaza. Well, we've also heard from the BBC's Orla Guerin, who's been speaking to a doctor from Al-Shifa Hospital.
We managed to contact a plastic surgeon, Dr. Ahmed Mulalakati, and he really poured out his heart in the conversation, his fears, his frustration, his concern for his patients. He said that last night there had been a lot of bombing and shooting around the hospital. He said, in fact, that there had been a direct strike on the fifth floor by Israel and that a hole had been punched in the floor. He said that he and colleagues were sheltering on the floor below. He said they were trying to console each other. They felt that these might be the last moments of their lives. And he said the impact on the floor above was into a room where patients were located, but he said that no one was actually hurt. Now, he described a situation full of fear for staff, for patients, and for many people sheltering inside the hospital, with Israeli troops now moving around. He gave us some numbers. He said he thought there were about 700 patients, the same number of staff, and about 2,000 others who were still sheltering. And he said it was impossible in recent days for anyone to try to leave, because anyone who did came under fire from Israeli forces and were wounded or were killed by Israeli tanks or Israeli snipers. And this despite Israel's statement that there would be a safe corridor for evacuations. I asked him about this issue of the claims by Israel and now by the United States that Hamas is operating from underneath the hospital. He was adamant that he had never seen a single gun or a single Hamas member inside the hospital. He said there were tunnels under all of Gaza. He described it as an underground city. But he said he had never seen anybody emerge from a tunnel into the hospital. He insisted it was an entirely civilian facility and that people are now trapped there. And he asked, when is help going to come?
Orla Guerin ending our reporting there from Israel and Gaza. Now, dealing with increasing migration and asylum seekers is a critical issue for some European governments. Here in the UK, the government has suffered a major setback in the way it wants to deal with asylum seekers. The Supreme Court here in London has ruled as unlawful the policy of sending some migrants to a third country, Rwanda, while their applications are processed. The human rights lawyer Geoffrey Robertson welcomed the ruling.
It's a great vindication of the rule of law, and indeed the rule of British law, even though we may express it in French. Refoulement is a French word. It's perhaps British people can pronounce it refoulement, because it is foul. It's sending people who escaped from death and torture back to the country where they'd be killed and tortured.
Geoffrey Robertson there, who, for the record, once served as a minister in government under the current Labour opposition. Well, our political correspondent Rob Watson told me what this all means.
The Rwanda policy was the idea that people who had arrived in Britain on boats, that they would be sent to Rwanda, where they would make asylum claims there. In other words, say, look, we are legitimately refugees. So that's the sort of nub of it. And interestingly, what the court has sort of said is not that the sort of principle of outsourcing asylum claims to third countries is illegal, but they've sort of said that Rwanda in particular has a problem because you couldn't really be sure that they had the sort of resources or the sort of setup to do it properly.
So, I mean, it's a significant knock, isn't it, for the ruling Conservative Party and the Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak. This is one of his key five pledges, is it, in a year ahead when there's probably going to be a general election here?
Absolutely, Robin. I mean, at the start of this year, he said one of the things he was going to do is to stop the boats. And now, clearly, that is in tatters in the sense that it's clearly not going to be any deportations before the end of the year. And really why this matters is that opinion polling suggests that for people who vote Conservative in 2019, people who voted Brexit in 2016, this is something they feel really, really passionately about. But, I mean, interestingly, Robin, it's not as if Mr. Sunak is saying, all right, hands up, this has all gone horribly wrong. He's sort of doubling down, saying, look, what we're going to do is we're going to try and improve Rwanda's capacity to process asylum seekers. But he's also sort of threatened, if you like, to press the sort of nuclear button. And that's to say, well, you know, if Britain absolutely had to ignore United Nations and European court conventions, well, maybe it would.
All right. So, I mean, he's been speaking in the last hour or so in the House of Commons in Parliament. How significant is this policy for him as a leader and for his party and in terms of their legitimacy, their credibility?
Well, it's hugely significant because he did make this a pledge. He was incredibly bold about it. As it turns out, it seems rather unwise to be so bold. And it's something that many Conservative MPs feel immensely passionately about, particularly those on the right of the party. And now clearly they are set to disappoint their voters, at least in the short term.
And just quickly, we've touched on this before. It's also being watched by others in other European capitals, isn't it?
It is, because Britain is not the only country to think about outsourcing the processing of asylum seekers to third countries. And this, you know, this doesn't mean that that can't be done. It just means that any country who was thinking about doing it would need to make sure that they picked a country that their courts would think was safe. And in this case, the British court has decided that Rwanda isn't safe on the basis of UN evidence.
Rob Watson reporting. Two men who are arguably the most powerful leaders in the world will meet face-to-face in a few hours' time. President Biden and China's Xi Jinping will have talks in California. It's only the second time they've met in their current jobs. A lot has changed, in particular for Mr. Xi, since the last sit-down. This meeting, on the edge of a summit of Asia-Pacific leaders in San Francisco, is aimed at easing tensions over trade and technology restrictions and U.S. support for Taiwan. From California, here's Gary O'Donoghue.
In the grey, overcast skies above me here in San Francisco, there's a plane circling. It's trailing a banner. It says End CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, and free the Uyghurs. It is by no means an exhaustive list of the issues that have plagued US-China relations for years.
This meeting can hopefully put a floor to the downward spiral of China-US relations.
Both Presidents Xi Jinping and Joe Biden clearly want to stabilize the relationship.
Two views from Beijing and Washington. The first from Wang Guang, a journalist and academic. The second from Danny Russell, a former Assistant Secretary of State.
Obviously, we have radically different systems, and technology also has been a driver because the race to gain the upper hand in critical emerging technologies directly connects not only to economic power, but to military power.
For Wang Guang, America needs to stay out of Chinese internal affairs.
President Xi has good intentions towards the United States. I think it would be fair to say that he's disillusioned over the years by the fact that, number one, America is set on containing and beating up this a near peer. And the liberals in America, he found, have this obsession with issues such as U.S.-style democracy, human rights, and would tend to impose their own values and own ideology on other peoples.
Taiwan, 130 kilometers off the Chinese coast, regularly holds air raid drills. China claims the island of 23 million people as its own territory. The US doesn't support Taiwanese independence, but does oppose any attempt by Beijing to take over. It's led to escalating tensions in the region with hundreds of close naval and air encounters.
We don't want anything to happen to Taiwan by force.
The situation worsened last year when Nancy Pelosi, the then Democratic Speaker of the US House of Representatives, went to Taiwan, angering China. Military-to-military communications were severed, and restoring those is a key aim of this summit.
We're following new details about that Chinese spy balloon traveling across the country.
The communications crisis worsened in February when an alleged Chinese spy balloon was shot down by the Americans as it crossed the United States. Former U.S. ambassador to China, Max Baucus, says it was a particular low point.
It passed over our house, matter of fact, here in Montana. It was serious because it's visual. The visual is a balloon, which is all kinds of fanciful emotions. Let's make sure that post-APEC there are no more balloons.
That the two leaders have agreed to meet here in San Francisco is a success in itself. But few believe this meeting will herald some new dawn in cordial relations between two powers whose interests differ so widely.
Our North America correspondent, Gary O'Donoghue, reporting. Still to come on the Global News podcast, the BBC finds evidence of an illegal market in unofficial weight loss drugs.
Even if you go over by 1-2 milligrams, that can cause severe side effects. Diarrhea, vomiting. It can potentially be life-threatening.
Welcome back. And as world leaders prepare for the annual COP meeting on climate change later this month, it's being held in Dubai, there are fresh warnings that man-made global warming is making more people across the world sick and causing more deaths from extreme heat and drought. Our global health correspondent, Tulip Mazumder, has been looking at the new report in the medical journal The Lancet.
So this is a huge report. This was 114 scientists from around the world, including experts from the World Health Organization, the World Meteorological Organization, and 50 odd other institutions. So it's a big piece of work with lots of data in there. Some of the headlines, they're calling this a stock take of kind of where the world is in terms of climate and health. And they suggest that by looking at the most recent 10-year global average of how much our planet has been warming, so that's about 1.14 degrees Celsius, they found that heat-related deaths in people over 65 increased by 85% between 2013 and 22 compared to the late 90s. Now, they say that's more than twice the increase that would have been expected if the climate hadn't changed. So if you take other things into account, like aging population, things like that. We know that the very old and the very young are in particular risk of heat stress. For older people, for example, high temperatures can exacerbate things that they already have, like heart conditions, or if they're already at higher risk of having a stroke. And that's a real worry, because the report also says we were, on average across the globe, exposed to more than 2.5 months of health threatening high temperatures each year between 2018 and 2022. And they said more than half of those days were made more likely because of climate change caused by humans. And just one last one. They're finding that increasingly frequent heat waves and droughts were responsible for 127 million more people experiencing food insecurity in more than 120 countries in 2021 than in the 90s and early 2000s. So lots of change and lots of concern here.
Well, I was going to say just briefly, that combination of extreme heat but also more drought, which you've alluded to there, is particularly threatening for those in less well-off countries.
Exactly. And that's another thing they really point to in this report. And it's been said many times before that the people who are least responsible for climate change are going to be the ones that are most impacted. And they are poorer countries that already have food security issues. So this is a particular concern for them as well. But there is hope in all of this. We're being told that they were quite mindful that, you know, it's not just all doom and gloom. They say that there does need to be a significant acceleration in the world's transition away from what they call health harming fossil fuels. They also had some very strong condemnation for governments and companies and banks for continuing to invest in oil and gas. But they said there's lots of opportunity here because by cutting fossil fuels and really getting on with that now, happening much quicker than it's happening so far, you make human health better more generally because, you know, diets become better. You have more access to safer drinking water.
Tulip Mazumdar reporting. Now let's go to Haiti, where one of the most powerful gang leaders has been killed, prompting fears of a new turf war between groups fighting for control of his territory. Iscar Andris was one of the three leaders in control of Cité Soleil, the biggest slum in the capital, Port-au-Prince. Reports from Haiti say his gang was responsible for blocking the country's main fuel terminal for many weeks last year, which caused fuel shortages, power cuts and rioting. So who was Iscar Andris? Well, my colleague Victoria Uankuna found out more from Harold Isaac, who is a journalist in Port-au-Prince.
Iscar Andris, one of the founders of the G9 gang alliance, where he lives in Cité Soleil, has been known as a difficult neighborhood for years on end. And as such, it's not surprising that some folks in the area decide to take the matter in their own hands and develop criminal enterprises at the same time.
So how did he rise to power to become a gang leader from being a simple math teacher?
If you look at his history, it's not necessarily any different from other folks that have, especially notorious gang leaders such as Barbecue, who is internationally renowned. But Iscar is known to be one of the veterans of these criminal enterprises in this area. It has been known for years, and he's been known to be ruthless. The gang dynamic in Haiti always has been known to have a political component to it. And even today, many of the gang leaders take political stand against or for government. So it's not necessarily completely out of character that you would have someone that would switch his or her trade to get involved in being a criminal.
So what do we know so far then about Iscar Andris's death?
At this stage, it still remains unclear the details of how he died. There are rumors stating that he may have been poisoned and as a result decided to take his own life. But that being said, none of these details have been confirmed. What we know at this stage is that he died and that as a result, a turf war has reignited in the area with, you know, rival gangs trying to take over Bélékou, which is the area that he used to control.
What are some of the things that Mr. Andris has been alleged to have been involved in when he was at the top of his game as a gang leader?
As part of the G9 gang alliance, which he is one of the founders, Iscar was involved in racketeering of merchandise trucks, involved in theft, involved in demanding businesses to pay for security. It's very populous. Nearly 300,000 people are living day by day in that area in very difficult conditions. And that renewed fresh bout of violence that ensued after his death is creating serious challenges for humanitarian interventions in this area.
And that was Harold Isaac speaking to us from Port-au-Prince. Now, the BBC has found evidence of a secret market in unlicensed versions of the so-called skinny jab in beauty salons in the UK. The official new weight loss drug is sold as Ozempic or Wegovy, and it's only available on prescription from a doctor. It's supposed to be taken as well under medical supervision. But the BBC's Priya Rai has been investigating people selling cheap, unlicensed versions of the medication with dangerous side effects.
Hiya. I'm just here to pick up some semaglutide that I ordered this week.
Okay. It's a Saturday morning and I've just been sold a knockoff version of a prescription weight loss drug at a beauty salon, despite not seeing a doctor. Semaglutide is the active ingredient in the two prescription drugs, Ozempic and Wegovy. Ozempic was originally made to treat diabetes, but because its side effects include a loss of appetite and lots of celebrities were rumoured to take it, it started a craze for these so-called skinny jabs. A black market popped up in the UK, with British sellers on social media selling a knockoff product with videos like these.
Stop wasting your money on the Ozempic pen. Semaglutide, £100.
But now a BBC investigation reveals that a black market is also operating in beauty salons in Liverpool and Manchester. I secretly recorded in four salons and heard dangerous advice being given on how to take the drug.
The salon workers' voices have been distorted.
You start with a small dose. I started with 10 and now after 5 weeks I'm up to 16 units. But you just do it yourself. You think, well, I've started to feel a little bit more hungry. So, because your body does get used to it, so you just increase your dose slightly.
So you're just like listening to your body almost. Is it possible to have like too much or...?
Well, if you have too much, you just wouldn't want to eat anything and you might feel sick. Okay. It's not going to be dangerous.
Novo Nordisk, a Danish company who makes the real drug, says there is no approved generic or cheap version. The official drug, called Wegovy, is designed for people living with obesity or who have weight-related health conditions. Official versions are taken under expert medical guidance. This is not what I saw at the salons I visited. Although some asked if I had any health conditions, all were happy to sell me semaglutide despite me being a healthy weight. Although we could only visit a small number, we found other examples of salons across the UK advertising knockoff versions of the drug. We lab tested 12 samples, 11 bought from social media and one from a salon, and found that while most of them contained the active ingredient, a quarter contained little or none of the drug.
12 products have been bought from a manufacturing chain that isn't regulated.
Here's what Dr. Alex Lawson, a consultant clinical scientist at University Hospital Birmingham, had to say.
So other products may be less pure, may contain things that are more dangerous, and potentially the next time people buy from these manufacturers, who's to say that manufacturing process hasn't changed?
The truth is, you don't know what you're getting, and even if you did get a real drug under these conditions, the healthcare professionals I spoke to issued strong warnings about injecting so-called skinny jabs without proper medical oversight. Dr. Idris Mughal is an NHS doctor who runs a popular TikTok account combating medical misinformation.
Even if you go over by 1-2 milligrams, that can cause severe side effects. Nausea, gastrointestinal upset, diarrhea, vomiting. And if it's not done in a properly sterile environment, it can potentially be life-threatening.
So have any of these sellers broken the law? Well, it's such a new area that the group who regulate medicines in the UK have said they decide on a case-by-case basis based on how it is being sold and the claims they make about the products.
Priya Rai. Now, we're going to end on two unusual worlds colliding, birds and US talk show hosts. And just to add to the confusion, it's happening in New Zealand. A competition in the country to find its bird of the century has ended with a winner that vomits and it grunts. It's called the Puteki Teki. But it's been slightly controversial because the talk show host John Oliver, who is not a New Zealander, exposed a loophole in the rules to mount a high-profile campaign for the eventual winner.
I don't just want the Puteki Teki to win. I want it to win in the biggest landslide in the history of this magnificent competition. I want it to do to other bird of the century candidates what the Puteki Teki does to fish in New Zealand's lakes. That is, eat them alive and then throw them back up in a ball of feathers.
Well, I'm going to tell you in a minute how you can see some pictures of the Puteki Teki. But why all the fuss about this puking, grunting bird? Well, Nicola Toki is the chief executive of Forest and Bird, New Zealand's leading independent conservation organisation. And she's been speaking to my colleague, Nick Robinson.
Forest and Bird, for the last 18 years, has run a Bird of the Year competition. It generally invites some controversy. It often even makes international headlines, but only a ripple compared to the tidal wave that we have seen.
Indeed, but the controversy is partly because of what it looks like, isn't it? It's been described as a weird puking creature with a colourful mullet.
Yes, and we embrace the mullet in New Zealand. So I think maybe... maybe people were trying to channel their inner New Zealander and vote for the mullet. But yes, it has been somewhat of a surprise to us in Forest and Bird. It's fair to say myself and my team haven't had an awful lot of sleep over the last few days, but we're okay about that. We're doing it for the birds.
It looks, I'm told, like a great crested grebe. here in the UK.
Yes, it is. It is, in fact, the Australasian crested grebe. And I have posited to my my counterparts over the ditch over in Australia that it might be a way of international diplomacy between our two countries, which have a fairly healthy rivalry.
I was rather hoping for the Kakariki Karaka, only because it's hard to say.
Yes. the Kakariki Karaka is, in fact, our rarest forest bird. And I think that's the thing to learn about New Zealand is two things. If it's got four legs and fur, didn't belong here. So anything that has four legs and fur in this country is genuinely wreaking havoc for our native birds. And secondly, unfortunately, we are the extinction capital of the world, and that is largely because of the threats to our native birds.
Nicola Toki from Forest and Bird in New Zealand there. And if you want to see what the Puteki Teki looks like, there's no video of it doing its special thing, but you can see at BBC News online. That's all from us for now, but there will be a new edition of the Global News podcast later. If you want to comment on this podcast or the topics covered in it, you can, of course, send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. And you can also find us on X, formerly known as Twitter, at Global News Pod. This edition was produced by Alice Adderley. It was mixed by Ben Martin. The editor is Karen Martin. I'm Robin Brandt. Until next time, thanks for listening. Goodbye.
How do we navigate in space?
Are humans naturally clean and tidy?
What exactly is this quantum computer?
Can smell enhance your appetite?
Crowd Science is the podcast that takes your science questions and goes in search of the answers.
My question for Crowd Science is, are artistic brains different?
Stick with me, because there's been some really fascinating research into this.
That's Crowd Science from the BBC World Service.
I love this question.
Just search for Crowd Science wherever you found this podcast.
Wow.